Speaking of return guys, Speedy B finds a seam. Brandon Banks has some room. Look out! Banks near the 50 to the 40. Brandon Banks down near the 20. He's going to score! Touchdown! Oh my goodness!
Gable running away from defenders down the sideline.
Throws it out there. It's tipped and intercepted by Rico Murray. He's got just the quarterback to beat. And Rico Murray will score. Touchdown, Hamilton.
Here's a play action. Kolaris now with time. An open man. Pascal. He is going to score. And Hamilton is on the board.
Another, shakes one, and still another! No way! Brandon Banks down the sideline! There he goes! Look out! Not again! It's a touchdown! Holy smoke! He's done it again!
Welcome to Potski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Mikey, buddy. Long time no talk. I didn't think we'd be sitting down and recording this soon, but a lot of stuff has gone down since we last picked up the microphones, eh?
Yes, sir.
We got a new commissioner. We got a fan favorite sticking in Hamilton. We got some new rules to talk about. We got a giant controversy that pissed a lot of people off last week. Let's start with the new commissioner. The CFL announced Jeffrey Orridge will be replacing Mark Cohan at the end of April. So what do you think about the hiring?
Well, I haven't heard of the guy before the hiring, but you know, he has a Harvard background. I guess he was part of the Dream Team, the U.S. Dream Team basketball team back in 92 or 93. I'm not sure which 90, year, but
it was 92.
Yeah. CBC Sports, something to do with that. So I'm not an expert on him, but he seems like a smart guy. He seems like he has a lot of passion for the league when he was saying his speech, you know, about how the CFL is fair and all that. And you could tell he was talking about Warren Moon and black quarterbacks coming to the league before they were really accepted in the NFL. And he grew up kind of watching Warren Moon play as an Eskimo. So I think he has a lot of appreciation for the league, even though he was born in the States. He's been in Canada now for 6 or 7 years. And he has big shoes to fill with Mark Cohan leaving. But, you know, he seems like a really bright guy. And I think it's a good choice just by the short time that I've actually known him or seen him talk. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Like I said, big shoes to fill, but he's going to do what he can. Hopefully he can fix the Toronto situation and all that. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it does. He does seem to have a good head on his shoulders. And he, like you said, huge shoes to fill replacing Cohan. But I think the thing that stuck out to me is all the experience that he has. He worked a lot with CBC, it seems. I'm just reading his, like, a little resume of his here. And there's a lot of things that he needs to accomplish, obviously, as we go forward as commissioner. Obviously, he doesn't have to fix as much as Cohan did. Like, getting Ottawa back was probably the number one thing that Cohan had to do while he was in office. The league is stable. I think we're 8/9 of the league is pretty darn stable. We know what that ninth team is. But that's not to say he has nothing to do. There are a few things that I think he needs to sort of figure out, some of them much sooner than later. I think obviously the first thing on his agenda is we got to find out where the heck the Grey Cup's going to be in 2016. It seems a little late, at least it feels a little late to me, for them not to have announced where next year's game is going to be. I think we talked about on a previous podcast, there was talk of Toronto. There's obviously still talk of Hamilton. Ottawa's in the mix, though like I said before, and I will continue to say, I think 2017 is Ottawa. And based on not knowing where 2016 is, I decided to do a little background checking. And I think we talked about it either the last episode or the episode before about how three straight Grey Cups in the East would not be a great thing for the league. So I did a little research and found out that, and I can't believe this completely went over my head, 6 of the last 7 Grey Cups have been out West. 2009 was in Calgary. 2010 was in Edmonton. 2011 was in BC. 2013 was in Regina. 2014 is in BC. And this year's is in Winnipeg. Every West team will have had the Grey Cup in the last 6 years. So if we go Toronto, Ottawa, Hamilton, I don't really think anyone should complain.
No, I don't think that's a big deal at all. It could be a good thing. Actually, I'm leaning towards Toronto just because they don't really know what kinks have to be worked out with Tim Hortons Field, and it might be the last opportunity to put a Grey Cup in the Sky Dome. So.
Yeah, that's sort of my thinking too. Another thing with the new commissioner, if you look at some of the stuff he's accomplished over his professional career, he was instrumental in getting the rights for the Olympics back to CBC. And one of the things that was big for the Olympics was online streaming of the events. Yeah. I'm not a big Olympics watcher. I more remember from the World Cup because – well, I'm not a huge soccer fan. I do enjoy watching the World Cup and Euro Cups and international games and stuff like that. And there were a lot of times when I was – like the World Cup's in the summer, and I was sitting outside barbecuing and watching the games on the laptop, and it was great. Mm-hmm. And we don't have that with the CFL. We get the games on TSN, and if you want to watch on your computer, you got to use less than savory means in order to find the games. Yeah. And then even when the games are then put on TSN's website afterwards, they disappear. I wanted to go watch some clips, or like I know CFL.ca has a lot of like game highlights on there. But I was bored one day and I felt like maybe, you know, scrounging through some of the games and maybe looking for some stuff. And they're nowhere to be found. They scrubbed them off the site. I'm sure someone out there can tell me how to find them via Google or whatever. But the CFL needs a larger digital presence, and we're in 2015. It's the days of exclusive cable distribution is over. People are quote unquote cutting the cord with Netflix and Hulu in the States, and HBO is about to unveil their own streaming service. We're no longer just waiting for when something's going to show up on our television screen. Sports seems to be the one avenue where appointment viewing is still important. You don't want to really watch a game after it's already happened, because finding out the score is it's very easy, especially in this age of Twitter and Facebook and all the social interactions online. You're going to find out who won, and it's going to kind of ruin it for you. But I think the CFL needs to increase its digital presence.
Yeah, and that's what he seems to have a lot of experience in. You were talking about the Olympic app. I think he said there was 2 million plus downloads for that. And with the TSN, well, you can watch games online, but it's TSN Go, I believe. And only certain providers have that. So, yeah, they need to step it up a lot. And, yeah, they need to reach a younger demo. And online is the way to do that. So hopefully he can step up the game of the CFL online.
And the thing is, they do a lot of great stuff online. They're very – the league and its teams are very social media minded.
Yeah.
Would probably be the best way to put it. They're out there. They engage fans. They – for an organization that is so fan friendly, it's really odd that their television contract is so restricting. I'm guessing it's because – of the deal they signed with TSN that didn't really – TSN probably has the exclusive rights to show the games. So I doubt that there's really much wiggle room in the TV contract now to bring in showing games on a digital platform. I'm guessing by the next contract that'll be something that'll be much more important. And who knows? Maybe the games won't even be with TSN in 5 years when the contract's up. Maybe they go to Netflix, or maybe they – you know, like – we're quickly moving towards digital platforms as the way to consume our television, our movies, our media. It's time for the league to take that step forward.
Yeah, I've heard stories about Netflix or maybe even YouTube trying to get involved in the next NFL contracts. So that's, you know, maybe the way of the future. But
the NFL has I think it's called Game Pass, and you pay like $50, I think it is, and you get all the games, you can watch all the games online, every game for every team. Yeah. I was looking into it because I was like, do I get rid of, because the only reason I still have cable is to watch sports. I don't need it for anything else. But if you look for the Game Pass for the NFL in Canada, there are blackout restrictions, Thursday night football, Monday night football, Sunday night football, all the playoff games in the Super Bowl. You can't watch online. You have to still use a cable box, and you still need a cable hookup and a television to watch them. I'm guessing it's the same thing there. The restrictions are we paid all this money to show these. We are showing them first. I think that we will get out of that in the next round of TV contracts.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see, that's for sure.
And I think the last thing he really – and this is the big one to me, and this will segue nicely into our next topic of conversation, and it's fixing the Argos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much he can do, and even before he takes office, it looks like movement is being made. And the big controversy of last week was, of course, the unofficial moving in of the Toronto Argonauts to BMO Field. I, for one, applaud that. I'm 99% sure you're on the same side as I am.
Absolutely.
So it looks like – you know what they say, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
I think sooner rather than later we're going to see the Argos playing at BMO Field, and I, for one, couldn't be happier.
Me too. You know, it just makes sense. You know, public stadium made with public money. You know, you get more dates at the stadium, you get more usage of it, more revenue for MLSE or whoever gets the money. Yeah, TFC fans are up in arms, you know, grass. But, you know, the teams should work together. You know, Toronto, it's a weird dynamic with Toronto sports fans. It's like they're, you know, they're gangs fighting turf wars or something. You know, the Jays fans hate the Argos because they can't put grass in the Sky Dome. TFC fans hate the Argos because they will probably be moving into their stadium. Argos fans hate the TFC fans. It's very strange. I just want to say, I keep seeing this note, like people keep saying, oh, build your own stadium, you know, build your own stadium. But, you know, where are you going to build it? You know, is it going to be built before they get kicked out of the Rogers Center? Where is the money going to come from? You know, who's going to pay for it? BMO is the only realistic option. And if it's not BMO, then it's I don't think they're building another stadium. So it's either BMO Field or the Argos Fold. So, you know, TFC fans, I get you want to protect your stadium or whatever, but it's not your stadium, okay? It's taxpayers paid for it. It was supposed to be a dual stadium, you know, with the FC and the Argos playing in there in the first place. You know, you can argue what actually happened, whose fault it was, but this is happening, and I believe it's happening, so you're just going to have to deal with it. And listen, I've been looking up some major like soccer teams that play on hybrid grass. You know, Chelsea FC plays on hybrid grass, Everton, Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United. You know, if it's good enough for them, it should be good enough for TFC.
Well, those you're talking about some of the biggest soccer clubs in Europe. So, yeah, you're right. If Manchester United and Chelsea can play a game on hybrid grass, then the MLS can do with it as well. But to your point about this sort of gang warfare amongst Toronto sports fans, it is really weird. Ottawa has, I believe it's an NASL franchise, the Ottawa Fury, who play at TD Place, where the Ottawa Redblacks play. They co-promote. You buy tickets to the Redblacks, get tickets to the Fury. Like, there's a synergy there. I hate using that word, but they cross-promote and they're together. The Whitecaps and the BC Lions both play at BC Place. Mm-hmm. I'm fairly certain. I can't say this for sure, but I'm fairly certain the Seattle Sounders play at CenturyLink Field, where the Seahawks play.
Yeah, same with the New England team play at the football stadium.
Play at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough.
Yeah.
And the Pacific Northwest is a soccer hotbed.
Yeah.
Like, where if you're looking for where soccer is most important and most rabid in North America, you head to the Portland, Seattle, Vancouver area. They love it out there. Absolutely love it. So this idea that the Argos and TFC can't get along and play together is asinine, as far as I'm concerned. And like you said, this was the idea of, oh, build your own stadium, build your own stadium. They did build their own stadium. It's called BMO Field. There was an article that someone linked to on Twitter last week when all of this was going down, written by Dave Naylor of TSN when he was still at the Globe and Mail back in 2008. That said, the original funding agreed to by City Council in Toronto stated that BMO Field would be convertible to a Canadian football field. Now, that was ignored. Mm-hmm. And now you can't fit end zones. You can't fit a field in where BMO is. So that's the reason for all these renovations, is that – well, now push has come to shove and people are like, well, this was the – you can't ignore the agreement – the funding agreement that was mandated by council. You're not allowed to do that. So all these TFC fans who are like, this is our stadium, and banging their chest and saying, no Argos at BMO, they don't have a leg to stand on. They can say all they want about, well, they pulled out of the deal, or this was supposed to happen and it didn't, so too bad for them. Frankly, they can shut up. It was such a ridiculous argument in the first place, that the Argos shouldn't be there for whatever reason these TFC fans want. It's a ridiculous argument now. It was a ridiculous argument then. It'll be a ridiculous argument until it's finally settled that the Argos are playing at BMO. And these guys can complain all they want. This is happening. The Argos will be there. They'll be playing. There's nothing they can do about it. So, frankly, shut up and suck it up and get on with your lives. It's not that big a deal. It's a big deal for the Argos because I think this is what's going to hopefully with this move and a new owner, this could be the thing that puts them over the top, just like Tim Hortons Field did in Hamilton. The Ticats are about to become a profitable team for the first time in like 4 decades. Mm-hmm. And I, for one, am thrilled about that. And I want the Argos to survive because I want to hate them.
Yeah. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of standing up for the Argos. Like, I want.
Oh, I know. It makes me feel sick. All these times I'm defending the Argos, and it's like, oh my God, I feel so bad. It's like, can't we get the games going so I can call Chad Owens a crybaby or make fun of Ricky Foley for being a moron? Like, let's get back to that. I'm not an Argo booster, but I'm a CFL booster. So we got to defend the Argos. It sucks.
It's I'm tired of this never ending saga. You know, if this doesn't work for the Argos, then I don't know what will. You know, I believe it will. The fans are out there. Like, you can, you know, make fun of the Argos all you want. You know, they don't have fans, but they do have fans. And, you know, the TFC think that they're all high and mighty. And listen, I don't want to be arguing with soccer fans all the time. You know, I don't want TFC to fold. You know, have your team. But this notion that, like, they're so much more popular than the Argos, like, yeah, you get 20,000 people up for TFC games, you know, but I watched a couple games last year and it was half full, and the TV ratings are abysmal, and the Argos TV ratings are pretty damn good. So, you know, the Argos fans are out there, and I believe they will show up if they move into BMO, and I'm hoping that they will.
I agree. I think a big problem with the Argos is the venue they play in. I don't hate going to the Sky Dome to watch games. I go there pretty much every time the Cats are there. It's not good. Like, the sight lines are poor. Like, we can go over all the reasons why the Sky Dome sucks for football. We've been there. Like, everyone's made these arguments. I think they get to a nice, beautiful like, BMO's a nice place. You get to, and it's an outdoor facility, and like, I personally can't wait until the Friday night or Saturday afternoon after Labor Day in 2017 or 2018, whenever this move happens, 2016 maybe, who knows, and I'm sitting out in an outdoor stadium in that beautiful late summer weather at 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the afternoon or even 7 o'clock at night, watching the Cats pound the piss out of the Argos at BMO Field. It's going to be enjoyable. I smile just thinking about it.
Yeah.
So, like, I know soccer fans are pissed. Frankly, I don't care about that soccer fans are pissed. Like you said, TFC's TV ratings and MLS TV ratings are terrible.
Yeah.
They don't even come close to what the CFL does. And again, this is a public facility. Why wouldn't the city want 9, 10, 11 more dates? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't the city want that extra revenue? Like, it just the arguments against the Argos moving there are pretty much all aesthetic. It's, I don't want football lines in the stadium, or the grass will be messed up, or there's no logical reason why the Argos shouldn't move to BMO. There's none. If someone wants to comment or Twitter, send a tweet to either myself or Mike and give us the actual reason why the Argos should not play there, a solid reason that has nothing to do with the field, has nothing to do with anything like that, I'll be all ears. I'm willing to change my stance, yeah. But I've been very unmoved by the TFC argument as to why the Argos shouldn't be there.
Yeah, and easy with the name calling. I got called a Muppet by a soccer fan, and that really hurt my feelings.
Oh, we are going to keep this fan family friendly, but there was I got called a fat F-bomb. So, I'm not going to deny that. I'm pretty hefty, but not really sure how that buttresses your argument.
Yeah, silly.
Yeah. So let's stop being friendly to the Argos, and let's move on down the QEW down to Hamilton, where the big news was Bakari Grant's back.
My boy.
Signed a 1-year deal last week to stay with the Tiger Cats. Doesn't seem to be too thrilled about it if you read Drew Edwards' column about it. I'm not surprised. Grant obviously thought that he was going to get a longer deal and probably for a lot more money. But I am happy he's back. I think he's a solid, solid player. Very dependable. And he caught the first touchdown at Tim Hortons Field. How can you get rid of that guy?
Yeah, and he gave it to Bob Young, too. The football to Bob Young, which was a nice gesture. And he's just, he's just a Tiger Cat. He's been around for one of the longest standing Tiger Cats. You know, his production dropped a little bit last year, but there's only one ball to go around, and he wasn't getting a lot of tosses his way. So I think he does a lot away from the ball. You just gotta love Bakari Grand. He, like I said, he's just a Tiger Cat. And he has a passion for the team. Like I said last podcast, with the Argos Suck shirt on. I mean, this guy, I hope that he has a big year and they give him a longer contract after this year.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've liked – when he came in and there was that they sort of – the Ticats were looking to bring in big-bodied receivers. They brought him in. They brought Aaron Kelly in. And there was one other player, big dude.
Oh,
Jeremy Kelly.
Okay, yeah.
John, these like 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", these massive receivers. Grant stood out amongst them. He does the little things, and sometimes this can come off as a bit of an insult, I think, because he's a receiver. He wants to catch the ball and score touchdowns. That's what he wants to do. That's what he's paid to do. But he's not afraid to get his nose dirty. He's not afraid to throw a block. I think he's a team guy, and I think him coming back shows how much of a team guy he is. He wants to win here. All the talk, and we've covered this before, all the talk was that the Argos were offering him a deal to come to Toronto, and the idea that he decided to return to Hamilton tells me that he wants to be here. He wants to make it work here. He wants a long-term – wants to make this a long-term deal. I'm tripping over my words because I just like the guy. Like, you can't help it. Sometimes you just like certain players. Mm-hmm. And he's one of those players that I just happen to like.
Yeah, and he brings you got Fantuz and Grant. They're both 6'4". You got Speedy B, Sinkfield, or Speedy son of a guns. Tasker, who just catches everything. You know, I'm liking what we're putting together as a receiving corps this year, even though it's pretty much the same as last year, minus Shiger.
Yeah, Jiggy's gone, and in place is Spencer Watt, who's also – he's got a nose for the end zone, especially against Hamilton. I think he scored 5 or 6 career of his career touchdowns against the Ticats, something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's also a bit of a burner himself, not to the level of Banks or Sinkfield, obviously, but he can move. Grant signing – the interesting thing about that is we've seen over the years the Cats make a lot of player moves, especially since Austin took over. Like, if you look at who was on the roster when he took over in 2013 and who's on the roster now, Fantuz, Diakowski, like the Tim O'Neill, like there's very few guys still left over from the Belfay Cortez teams. But if you go look at the Grey Cup depth chart from last year, against Calgary, and who's still on the squad now, I counted 4 players that are no longer here. Delvin Bro, Mark Dial, Stephen McGee, and Sam Giguere. Bro went to the NFL. Everyone knew that was going to happen, so no one's surprised there. Dial is now in Winnipeg, and essentially he was beaten out for a spot by other American players. McGee was a backup quarterback that never saw the field. And I guess the only real big loss would be Giguere, but they replaced him with Spencer Watt. The player continuity from last year to this year tells me that they think that they have the team that can finally get to the Grey Cup and win the damn thing.
Yeah, it's so great to have players want to come back to Hamilton. And you're right. I mean, the loss of Jaguar is, you know, he's a good player, and I wish him well in Montreal. But, you know, with Watt, I think he's a quality Canadian receiver too, so that it doesn't change the dynamic of the ratio. So I have very high expectations for next year, and you know, they signed so many players that we need back, like Hickman, Reed, so many others. So I'm really, really excited about, like you said, the continuity of this team. The, you know, they're just going to come together. They're going to know each other from last year. And this is Austin's team now. It's totally Austin's team. And the sky's the limit as far as I'm concerned.
I think we might finally see this team start the season strong.
Yeah.
With the exception of 2009, Belfast's first full year as head coach, they started at 4-2 that year, tailed off midseason, finally made the playoffs. That was the strongest start they've had in the last 10 to 15 years. They haven't won their season opener since 2004. Mm-hmm. That's a long time to start the season 1-0. This year's not going to be easy. They got to go to Calgary to start the season, but with the player continuity, I think we might finally see this team maybe start the first 4 to 6 games at or over 500. Like maybe, you know, by week 5, they're, you know, 3-2, or week 6, they're 4-2 or 3-3. Like, I don't, with all the players coming back, there's more familiarity with the offense and defense. There's familiar, like the coaches are still here, so there's continuity all the way around. I think we might finally see this team start a little stronger, which means the way that they've ended the last few seasons, where they've gone on these runs where they've won like 7 of 10 games and 8 of 12 games. Like you put together a decent first half and these super strong second halves, this team could win 12, 13 games next year and maybe even run away with the division. As much as I think Montreal is good, They've made a lot of changes. So there's going to be a lot of learning for them. They might start the season slow. They might be the team that is the strongest come playoff time, but I think we might finally see, finally, the Ticats be good to start a season.
Yeah, and I don't know if I spoke on this in a past podcast, but I hate this notion of the season starts after Labor Day. I mean, 2 points is 2 points. I mean, well, let's just play 9 games then. Like, get a couple wins at the start, and then you won't have to win 10 in a row to, you know, get into the playoffs or get a home playoff date. So yeah, I just please get a couple wins to start the season. Like, you know, start, you know, 3-3 or whatever. Just don't start 1-4 or 1-5. Enough of that. Enough.
All right. So a lot of big news that happened since the last time we were together, and the CFL has just announced, the competition committee came out and gave us some potential rule changes. I say potential because these are proposed by the competition committee and will be approved or declined by the Board of Governors. And hoo boy, did this start a firestorm of criticism. Let's say we'll go point by point with each rule, and we'll give a few give our opinions on each of them. So I got the list here, so I'll start off. They're going to move the convert from the 12-yard line to the 32-yard line. Obviously, the idea is to make that that single point after touchdown, which was essentially automatic, and maybe a little bit more exciting. Your thoughts?
Well, I didn't have a problem with, you know, the old just single point from the 12. You know, it's been part of football for so long. But on the other hand, it doesn't bother me at all. You know, I guess it adds a little bit of excitement to it. You know, a 32-yarder should be pretty automatic anyways. But they move the two-point conversion up to the 3-yard line, which makes it a little bit tempting for the coaches to go for two more often. So, you know, anything that adds excitement to the game, I'm for. So I don't have a problem with moving the convert back or moving the 2 points up. Now, the 3-point convert isn't in play as a rule. It just might be experimented with in the preseason. I'm not a huge fan of the three-point convert. You know, it doesn't, you know, I'm not going to jump off a bridge if it happens, but, you know, I could do without it, but I'm not going to, you know, cry about it if it actually happens in the future.
Here's the thing. If they wanted to add excitement to the point after, I always thought, and maybe this is silly of me, instead of kicking it, scrimmage for it. You could start with the ball at the three to go for one, start with the ball at the five to go for two, and this three-point convert that they might try in the preseason, scrimmage that from the 10, which is their plan. The point after is, yeah, it's boring, but it's a point after. The point is it's essentially a bonus point, and it's an extra point. I don't really think there needed to be much in the way of excitement for that. Sure, now this might mean a kick can go wide and one of the return men, Brandon Banks, for example, is allowed to return that and can take it the other way for two. But is Banks really going to – like look, he's going to have to run something close to 130 yards or 125 yards or 120 yards to score 2 points. It seems like a – like, yeah, okay, it's a decent addition, and if the wind's blowing, maybe you see that exchange of points. But I don't really think the extra point needed to be more exciting. But like I said, if you're going to do that, then have them scrimmage for it. Start from the three and throw or run for the 1 point. Like if that was the goal, if the goal was to make it more exciting, there's another way to do it. There is one thing about the point after that has always bothered me, and it's only in the CFL. They run the clock. Mm-hmm. They run time off the clock, and you're taking offensive plays off the board by running the clock. Stop the clock. Yeah. Like in the NFL, and I know people hate when it's like the NFL does this, the CFL should do that, and blah, blah, blah. We talked in the last time about NFL and CFL and all that junk. The NFL doesn't run the clock because this is an extra point. Like, just stop the clock, and then you have more time with the offenses on the field that they can score more points.
Yeah, sometimes the running of the clock in the CFL kind of confuses me a bit, but – yeah, I agree. There shouldn't be time running off the clock for the extra point. You know, it's just kick the damn thing and no time should be run off.
Yeah, and move on. Speaking of the clock, there was talk of they would increase the play clock to maybe 30 or 35 seconds. That apparently is not on not one of the proposed rule changes. They did, however, in lieu of that, they came up with a rule where our offensive coaches can signal to the referee that they want to run a tempo offense. Is that seems to be the words I'm hearing, tempo offense. So they can tell the referee they want to sort of go to like no huddle, hurry up offense, and the officials will spot the ball and immediately blow the whistle so that the defense doesn't have time to make all these big substitutions in order to come in. I'm not sure. Again, I hate saying this because this will probably get us in trouble, but the NFL does a thing where if the offense doesn't sub, the defense doesn't sub, and something like that, and increasing the play clock. I don't know. Like, to me, increasing the play clock to 30 seconds and saying if the offense doesn't bring in new guys, the defense doesn't have a right to bring in new guys, bam, there's your tempo style offense, and you don't really have to – like, is there going to be like a blue flag that an offensive coach is going to wave to get the referee's attention? Like, I don't know how it's really going to work. Like, are they just going to scream? Because coaches scream at the refs all the time. Again, it's a good idea. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I think there's a better way to do it where it's just increase the play clock and say, hey, if the offense keeps their package in and the defense wants to substitute, if they're substituting and the offense huts the ball and they're a man down or a man up and they get a penalty, and so be it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I didn't have a problem with the 30-second play clock if they wanted to go to that. Because the way it was before, the defensive substitutions, you know, they had time to substitute. So it was pretty much 30, 35 seconds in between plays anyways. So you know, I like the I like what they're thinking, you know, try to, because all the defensive substitutions, you know, the D-line, you can substitute people in, you know, the O-line's not substituting, so there's a distinct advantage for the defensive line there. So, you know, I like your idea. Maybe that would have been better, but you know, this way, whatever picks up the game and makes it more faster and, you know, makes more offensive plays, I'm for. So I like it.
Yeah, I think what we can both agree on here is that none of these rules, I don't think, are bad.
No.
Some of them I just think could have been done a little differently. All right, moving on. Contact with the receiver. The NFL, again, they have that rule where after 5 yards, hands off. It looks like the CFL is going there, although I've seen there might be a little leeway where hand fighting will still be allowed down the field. I'm not really a big fan of this rule. It kind of hamstrings defensive players, especially DBs. And one of the things that I actually enjoyed about the CFL, like ahead of the NFL, was the sort of fighting and physicality between DBs and wide receivers. Like Delvin Bro made his name up here by just beating the living tar out of opposing receivers. I guess it'll be something that we all have to get used to, because let's be honest, most of these rules, if not all of them, will be adopted. It's very rare that the Board of Governors rejects any sort of proposed rule change. I don't hate the rule, but I just the way it was fine to me.
Well, I like this, actually. You know, I was listening to an interview with Glenn Suter, did on Saskatchewan radio, and he said he was in the meetings when they were discussing these rules, and they were watching film, and he said the amount of clutching and grabbing downfield and tackling even by the DBs was just outrageous. So, you know, I want the CFL that I grew up with, okay? Listen, I like defense too, but the CFL is supposed to be about exciting football, big plays. I want to see 5,000-yard passers. I want to see 5,500-yard passers. This is the CFL. This is what, you know, I defended the CFL for so long. Yeah, NFL, you know, they pay the highest salaries. You know, they have the best players or whatever. But for the longest time, I was saying, but we have the better game. And recently, in recent years, it's kind of been hard to say that. So I like this rule. I think that it will open it up. And listen, if DBs can't cover without tackling people and roughing them up, then they shouldn't be playing. So I think it's a good rule. You can still jam them 5 yards from the line of scrimmage. And I understand that's different from the NFL because you don't have the waggle in the NFL, but this is, you know, when you send a blitz on defense and the DBs are tackling receivers, the quarterback doesn't have a chance in hell to, you know, get the timing right with the receivers. So I like this rule. I can see why people don't like it, but I personally, I think it's going to be great.
I just think something like this is a bit knee jerk. Like, I know last year everyone, you know, offense was down, scoring was down, all that stuff. And I'm with you. I want to get back to the era of slinging it around the yard and 50-point games and 6,000-yard passers. But I don't want the game maybe this is just me nitpicking, but and maybe it's not a fundamental change to the game. It's just – again, if they're still going to allow hand fighting and a little bit of physicality, then this is going to be fine. I just worry that it's going to go the way of the NFL, where it's like if you breathe on a receiver after 5 yards, you're getting a pass interference flag. Mm-hmm. And to me, that kind of takes away – like we already have a game that is trying to geared towards offense and scoring. There's already rules in play. Like the roughing the passer rule, sometimes you see that called and you're just like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I agree.
And you're right. I saw some when these came out and there was video on TSN and they were showing some of the stuff. Yeah, I saw a video of Jeff Tisdale hand fighting and jostling with someone. And I think it was Clarence Denmark of Winnipeg. And yeah, he is just mauling him. And no, I don't want that either. I just think, I guess this is going to be something that we're going to have to get used to. Mm-hmm. And maybe, again, like I said, if they're allowing the hand fighting and just a tiny bit of fight between the two, then this is going to end up being an absolute non-issue. The players will get used to it. We're going to get used to it. And if scoring goes up and offenses play better, but defenses adjust, then you know what? What the hell? Fine. There's been some changes to the special teams. One of the rules that I actually am hugely in favor of is adding the 5-yard no yard rule to the end of the run. I love this rule. Because once the ball bounced, you would see special team players just come in and just obliterate the guy picking up the ball, or they would just jump on the ball itself because it's like, well, it's 5 yards. Who cares? This is a maybe my favorite of all the rules that they're trying to introduce.
Yeah, I like it as well. I was a little confused when I first heard about it. Something about bouncy balls or something. But yeah, I like that rule too. And the the one that I'm not so sure about is the punt rule where the interior linemen don't leave until they punt the ball. I suppose it'll open up, it'll be easier for the punt return teams to set up their blocks and all that, and it might open up the return game a bit. But, you know, I think the return game was pretty good last year. You know, there was quite a few touchdowns and big returns. So I understand what you're saying, you know, when we're going back to the DB rules and all that. You know, you don't want to take the defense out of the game. So I'm not not that we're talking about defense, we're talking about special teams here, but I'm not so I'm interested to see how that rule works.
I seem to be saying this a lot. I should just put it on repeat and just press a button. But I think in the NFL they do something similar where certain players aren't allowed to leave like the line of scrimmage ish area on punts until the ball is kicked. And I agree. I don't think the return game was hugely affected. Like we can say this, we got Brandon Banks, who's, I think we can say definitively the best return man in the game. I don't think we'd get many arguments. Maybe there's some Toronto fans out there who would argue for Chad Owens, but Chad Owens sucks. So to hell with them.
Please. His return game has been declining for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Brandon Banks is the best return man in the CFL, bar none. Bring it on. I will defend it to the death. You got no argument. 8 other franchises. Maybe we can say, oh, well, we don't really need this change in the rule for our team because of the guy we have. But at the same time, I don't see this as this to me is a very minor change. It's not like the 5 interior linemen. I know sometimes they're not always offensive linemen. In fact, I think most of the time they aren't. But it's not like these guys are burners who are gunning down the field to stop them right away. These were your last line of defense anyway, and now they're further back. And this could actually be something where these guys are further back, and yeah, guys are still trying to make their blocks, and the punt return team can sort of move things around, but you're going to have these guys at the end there that maybe you might have to see a guy make an extra move or two, which again adds excitement to a play that's usually pretty exciting. When a punt returner gets past that first line of defense, that's when you start to see people rise out of their seats. And now there's a little bit more of a chess match at the end there. I think this one could be pretty good.
All right. I dig that.
And the rest, we got some just some little ones here. Coaches can't call for a measurement anymore. I guess that's just to sort of speed up the game instead of coaches pause. Like essentially coaches would ask for a measurement and sometimes it's like they're a yard and a half away. And it's like, that's just ridiculous. It seemed to me like it was sort of used as a de facto timeout in a way. That to me is not a big deal. Subjecting offensive pass interference to review. That makes sense. Like if you're going to do pass interference, if you're going to be able to review pass interference on the defense, I don't really understand why the offense wasn't just included in that last year, why it just wasn't pass interference in general.
Yeah.
And the last one, teams will no longer be allowed to demand that the kickoff team re-kicks after if the ball goes out of bounds. Again, I guess it's just in a way of speeding up the game. It's these three to me are essentially, if you're outraged over any of these three, I think you really need to find a new hobby.
Yeah, the outrage was quite enormous on the tweet machine. People saying, "Oh, you're ruining the game." I mean, we haven't even played it down yet, people. Let's just take her down a peg, shall we? I mean,
and it seemed that all of the anger was aimed at the 3-point convert, which is something that they might try in the preseason. It's not going to be in a regular season game, even if they adopt it. It's going to be something where they'll give it a look in the preseason only. So you're not going to see a 3-point convert. But even if they were, what's the like? The sanctity of the 2-point convert goes away. Like the 2-point convert was brought in, and a few years ago, like this, it's not like we've had the 2-point convert since the days of, you know, Newt Rockne or the days of the founding of the Hamilton Football Club in the 1860s. Like, football has always made changes in order to make the game more exciting or make the game different. Like the forward pass didn't exist at one point. And I'm sure when someone – like the word I kept hearing thrown out about all these changes was gimmicky. So I'm sure there was someone out there when someone was like, holy crap, he threw the ball beyond the line of scrimmage. That's a gimmick. That's that's going to ruin the game. Could you imagine football without the forward pass?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you want to watch, you know, ground and pound football, go watch the NFL from the 70s.
Rugby.
Yeah, watch rugby, yeah.
Like, and don't get me wrong, like these are great. These are that rugby's a fine game, but if you just want to see guys mash into each other while doing laterals, then watch rugby. Like, football is constantly changing, constantly evolving to make itself more exciting, to make itself safer. And the outrage, it made me laugh. Frankly, it made me laugh.
Me too.
Now, why don't we play a little game of being the competition committee ourselves? Are there any rule changes? I've got a couple. I don't know if you have any, but I've got a couple rule changes that I think might be worth considering. We already talked about stopping the clock on the PAT. That was one of mine. My other one, and this to me isn't really that drastic a rule change, the rouge, the single point. We love it. Some people hate it. I find it adds a little bit to the game. And the argument that I always get into is that it rewards failure. You miss a field goal, and you get a sympathy point. It's the everyone gets a medal of Canadian football. My argument to that is it's not that you're rewarding the team for failing to get a field goal. What you are doing is you are penalizing the opposing team for not getting it out of its own end zone. The problem I run into, and it's not something anyone said to me, but it's a problem that I'm always waiting for someone to bring up, is what about on balls that are kicked out of the back of the end zone or out the side of the end zone without being touched? If the return team, if the defense does not have a chance to play the ball, then the idea that you are rewarding failure kind of creeps up, and it's a valid argument. So my change would be that on any sort of single point, a missed field goal or a punt, if the ball is not playable, meaning it goes out the back of the end zone or the side of the end zone without either being touched by a member of the opposing team or bouncing in the field of play, I don't think you should reward a single point.
All right. I feel that, but it's kind of a similar rule. I just don't want single points rewarded for going out the side of the end zone. I want it to be strictly the back of the end zone.
Okay, that's an interesting tweak.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the only rule that I would tweak if I was on the rules committee.
So essentially what we're saying is, aside from the single point, we're pretty happy with the game.
Yes. Yeah.
I can definitely get into that. All right, buddy, we're reaching the end here, and you know what time it is now. It's time to fire up the old tweet machine and get some questions from our very loyal listeners.
All righty, I got them right here. Okay, the first five is from all the same person, Brian Broom.
Geez, he's a big fan, I presume.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know he is.
Number one, what are the chances for a huge Twitter meetup at the home opener? Now, we know you're going to be there. I'm still deciding on which game I'd like to come up for. So, you know, the home opener, there can be a huge Twitter gathering, minus me, perhaps, or maybe I'll make it up there for it. I mean, the home opener is in late July, or is it August?
August 3rd. Civic holiday. I believe that's August 3rd. It's a Monday night. It's at 7 o'clock. It's a bit of a late game, and especially it's a Monday, so like you coming up might be a little awkward, especially for work-wise and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, I'm pretty sure the date's August 3rd.
Yeah, so I will be making it up to a game, and I will be letting people know. So, you know, if Brian wants to come up for the home opener, that's fine. But if I do come up for a game, I will let Brian know and see if we can work something out.
Yeah, a Twitter meetup is obviously obviously doable at any – pretty much any – I go to – I'm at 9 Ticat games in Hamilton, one or two depending on how many there are in Toronto. This year I'm going to Ottawa finally to see a game at TD Place. You hit me up and I'll come meet you for a beer or a pop or whatever you're into. If you want to do a huge one outside the game at a tailgate, I'm into that too. Yeah, it's always doable. I'm always interested in interacting with other CFL and Tiger Cat fans.
Giddy up. All right, number two. Do you think there is an unsigned free agent that will end up with the Ticats?
No, I actually don't. I can be pretty definitive with this. I think they're done with – if we're talking about free agents as in CFL veterans, I think they're done. When I wrote last week about Bakari Grant resigning, I made that point. I don't see the Ticats dipping their toes into the free agent pool again. I think this is the team. I think they've got the team they want, and any other sort of signings are going to be guys from the neg list or tryout camps they've had, and from the draft. I doubt very highly that, like, say Jason Barnes or one of the other. He's the only one that came to mind off the top of my head. Other sort of free, CFL veteran free agents will be in Hamilton.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean the.
Where will they play? Like they don't have any spot. Like, yeah, okay, there's still some need for, I guess, defensive backs, but they found Delvin Bro at a free agent tryout camp. They don't really have any glaring needs. Yeah, you can always use more DBs. You can always use more offensive linemen. I hate to say it because I don't want to jinx them, but this team is pretty stacked across the board. Like there are some minor weaknesses, but like I said, when we were talking about Grant resigning, the continuity on this team, there's just not really many open spots, especially for starters. And you're not going to sign a CFL free agent, a veteran CFL free agent, and bring him in to be to sit on the bench. You're not going to bring in someone like that to just sit and do nothing.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty, you know, dry out there right now. I mean, there's Renee Curran or whatever. He's a linebacker. We don't need linebackers.
No, the Cats don't need, like, Taylor Reed, Simone Lawrence, Eric Harris. If they're going to bring in a linebacker, bring back Marcellus Bowman.
Yeah.
You know, he knows the system. If you're going to bring in a veteran and you bring a guy that already knows the system, a guy who, when healthy, can be is a stud player. Him not really playing for the Cats a whole bunch was actually one of the biggest disappointments for me because I always liked him as a player. Yeah. I think I always liked him in Winnipeg. I thought he was a hell of a player. I guess that knee injury just really sort of didn't sink him because he did play in some games, but it was just something he could never really get over, unfortunately. But yeah, like the guys out there, the Cats don't need anyone at the positions that are available. They need some DBs to fight for spots, but who's I can't even think of who the top rated free agent DB would be out there right now.
No, neither can I. Brandon Banks wants to play a big role in the offense this year. Thoughts?
All for it. He's a weapon on special teams, but he can also be he scored a lot of touchdowns last year in offense. He had he scored the only touchdown for the Cats in the Grey Cup. The more Brandon Banks, the better. I hope it doesn't take away from what he can do on special teams, but integrating him more into the offense, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think he showed that he could be a dependable receiver. I mean, he has pretty good hands, and you know, the only thing is, you know, you don't want to overwork the guy and maybe get him injured. So I think he'll probably maybe be a little bit more involved in the offense, but I don't think he needs to be like, you know, every single play on offense with his returns, with punt returns and kick returns. So yeah, I mean, he's a threat every time he's on the field. So I'm sure he'll get his looks on offense. I'm sure he'll get the ball, and I'm all for it as well. This one is, I might be talking out my ass a bit because I'm not totally up on the draft prospects, but, your prediction on who will be drafted first overall and who will the Ticats pick?
Again, much like you, I'm not all that familiar with the guys coming in. I did pay a little attention this weekend to the scouting combine. Mm-hmm. And for those who are wondering, the reason we are not touching on it is because Mike and I are pretty ill-informed, I guess would be the best word to say, about the upcoming draft. I don't want to make predictions on things that I don't entirely know about. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave that. There's some great, you can get some great draft stuff out there from plenty of other people. We're probably going to touch on the draft heading into it, and we'll obviously do a little bit of a post-draft recap at some point. But I paid a little bit more attention in the last couple, since the last time we sat down, and I think there was a discussion. I think we had a question then about the draft as well. I'm going to give out two names for who could go first overall. I think Ottawa will look for offensive line help.
Yeah.
They lost what was the name of the guy they lost to Edmonton? They got him in the expansion draft. Alexander Krasniak, something like that?
I believe so.
Yeah, he left and signed with the Eskimos, so I think they could use some offensive line help. And there's two names that I like. One is Sean McEwen from the University of Calgary, I believe. But do you think the guy I think they're going to go with, if everything is equal, I think these are the two guys that I like. But I think if everything's equal, they're going to go with the UConn offensive lineman Alex Matias. He's an Ottawa native. I think if he is not going to go to the NFL and he is going to play in the CFL, I think that's a slam dunk pick. You take the hometown kid first overall, boom, done.
Yeah, and another name of an offensive lineman is Brett Boyko, but I don't know if he was at the combine, and he might be getting NFL looks, so I don't know if they'll take a chance with him. As far as the Ticats, you know, I wouldn't. A name that stood out at the combine was Tavon Campbell, who ran a 4.35 5.40 with tremendous speed, and with the
that speed, no matter where you are, that is a sub 4.40 is whoo, that's fast.
Yeah, and with the new rules, not being able to really clutch on and grab after 5 yards, I mean, this guy could be a good pickup, and apparently he covered really well in the one-on-one drills. So, I'm not really sure, but he seems like a good pick for the Ticats. You know, a Canadian DB would be a nice addition. And another couple, you know, Lamar Durant has been causing a stir. Apparently he's a really good receiver prospect, so you know, he might get drafted high as well.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a whore for receivers. I think the last time we talked about it, I said the catch take a receiver. Their two needs for Canadian talent wise are offensive lineman, sort of, and receiver. To me, it's Lamar Durant would be the guy that I'd go with. Eric wrote a wonderful piece on him for us last week and really sold me on him. I watched his highlight film, really impressed. The guy is fast. He's strong. He's big. I like what he brings to the table. He might be gone by the time the Cats pick. There's another guy, Nick Dembski.
Yeah.
Who apparently also performed pretty well, in one-on-ones yesterday. I could see him as a potential player for the Cats. Give me a receiver. Fantuzzi's contract is up, and who knows if he's staying? And who knows if he wants to stay? Who knows if the team's going to offer him enough money? Who knows if he can stay healthy? Who knows? He's a bit of a question for a guy who's been one of the best Canadian receivers of the last 10 years, if not the best. There's a lot of question marks surrounding him coming in this year. He's never played a full season since signing with the Ticats, and if memory serves me correctly, he's only ever played one full season, period, and then he led the league in receiving. So we know what he can do, but he's getting up there in age. So maybe he could be shuffled off into a secondary role, or maybe he's elsewhere next year. I don't know. There needs to be sort of a replenishment of the Canadian receiving talent. So if there's one of those receivers, if they're sitting there when the Cats pick at number 8, hand in that card, fire off that pick. Let's get us another receiver in Hamilton.
Yeah, this is going to be a big year for Fantuzzi with the contract coming up. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how old he is. He might be 32 or 33. But, you know, he's going to have to stay healthy and have a big year if he wants to get one more big contract in the CFL. So I hope he stays healthy, and I think that he's going to have a big year if he does. Okay. Do you see the Ticats bringing in a punter? Josh Bartel still unsigned.
No.
No.
I don't think Bartel was a good punter. But as long as Medlock's here, they're just going to keep him doing both jobs. I don't see the need to spend a roster spot on a punter who, well, admittedly is better than Medlock. It doesn't add all that much. Yeah. I think the Cats are good when it comes to punting.
Yeah, I think they're just going to keep Medlock doing both jobs for next year.
Yeah, they brought him in, and he punted last year. It was admirable. Another year under his belt, more used to the way the winds blow at Tim Hortons Field. Yeah, I don't see the need.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, the last one comes from Major League CFL. Which game will be the Ticats' first loss at Tim Hortons Field this
Ooh.
Year?
Okay, let's look at the schedule. They open up at home against Toronto. That's a win. Then they play Winnipeg. That's a win. Then they play BC. Nah, that's a win. Hamilton tends to do pretty well against BC, both in BC and here. I'll say that's a win. Then they got the Owls. Here, I'll say the Cats beat them here. Labor Day against the Argos. Cats win that one. Here we go. September 19th and Friday, August the 2nd, back-to-back home dates with Edmonton and Calgary.
Oh, boy.
Follow that up on the 9th against Saskatchewan. If the Cats are not going to go 9-0 at home this year, it's going to be in that block of three games right there where they lose. I want to say that they are going to remain undefeated at Tim Hortons Field, but I am going to say that Ticat fans go home unhappy for the first time in Tim Hortons Field history on Friday, October 2nd, after the Stamps come in here and find a way to beat them, because Hamilton is going to go into Calgary the first game of the season and beat the Stamps. Stamps are going to come back and get revenge in Hamilton. There we go. Mark it down on the calendars. Friday, October 2nd.
Oh, boy. That's a loss. You know, I'm just going to go with the Homer answer and say they're not going to lose again this year. The streak will stay alive, 18-0. Or
16-0, and then they'll win the East final, so 17-0.
Yeah, they started their first couple games at MAC, last year. So, right, yeah, so the streak stays alive.
All right. No, there's no Brock Lesnar on this schedule for our Undertakers?
No.
All right. That's the last one?
That's the last one, buddy.
All right. Beautiful. What? Well, I guess we're done then. As always, you can find the podcast on iTunes. You can find it on the blog. You can find it on Mike's Twitter feed, on my Twitter feed. You can find it a lot of different places. So for this late March edition of Podski Wee Wee, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Eat 'em raw.
I was going to say Oski Wee Wee. Eat 'em raw.